Autobiography of Andrew Carnegie by Andrew Carnegie. Chapter 1. Parents and Childhood. If the story of any man's life, truly told, must be interesting, as some sage avers, those of my relatives and immediate friends who have insisted upon having an account of mine may not be unduly disappointed with this result. I may console myself with the assurance that such a story must interest at least a certain number of people who have known me, and that knowledge will encourage me to proceed. A book of this kind, written years ago by my friend Judge Mellon of Pittsburgh, gave me so much pleasure that I am inclined to agree with the wise one whose opinion I have given above. For, certainly, the story which the judge told has proved a source of infinite satisfaction to his friends, and must continue to influence succeeding generations of his family to live life well. And not only this, to some beyond his immediate circle it holds rank with their favorite authors. The book contains one essential feature of value. It reveals the man. It was written without any intention of attracting public notice, being designed only for his family. In like manner, I intend to tell my story, not as one posturing before the public, but as in the midst of my own people and friends, tried and true, to whom I can speak with some utmost freedom, feeling that even trifling incidents may not be wholly destitute of interest for them. To begin, then, I was born in Dunfermline, in the attic of the small one-story house, corner of Moody Street and Priory Lane, on the 25th of November, 1835. And, as the saying is, of poor but honest parents, of good kith and kin. Dunfermline had long been noted as the center of the damask trade in Scotland. My father, William Carnegie, was a damask weaver, the son of Andrew Carnegie, after whom I was named. My grandfather Carnegie was well known throughout the district for his wit and humor, his genial nature and irrepressible spirits. He was head of the lively ones of his day, and known far and near as the chief of their joyous club, Pantymuir College. Upon my return to Dunfermline, after an absence of 14 years, I remember being approached by an old man who had been told that I was the grandson of the professor, my grandfather's title among his cronies. He was the very picture of palsied eld. His nose and chin, they threatened ither. As he tottered across the room toward me, and laid his trembling hand upon my head, he said, "And ye are the grandson o' Andrew Carnegie, eh, mon? I ha' seen the day when your grandfather and I could ha' hallooed ony reasonable man out o' his jidgment." Several other old people of Dunfermline told me stories of my grandfather. Here is one of them. One Hogmanay night, an old wiffy, quite a character in the village, being surprised by a disguised face suddenly thrust in at the window, looked up and after a moment's pause exclaimed, "Oh, it's just that daft callant Andrew Carnegie." She was right. My grandfather, at 75, was out frightening his old lady friends, disguised like other frolicking youngsters. I think my optimistic nature, my ability to shed trouble and to laugh through life, making all my ducks swans, as friends say I do, must have been inherited from this delightful old masquerading grandfather, whose name I am proud to bear. A sunny disposition is worth more than fortune. Young people should know that it can be cultivated, that the mind, like the body, can be moved from the shade into sunshine. Let us move it, then. Laugh trouble away, if possible, and one usually can, if he be anything of a philosopher, provided that self-reproach comes not from his own wrongdoing. That always remains. There is no washing out of these damned spots. The judge within sits in the Supreme Court and can never be cheated. Hence, the grand rule of life which Burns gives, "Thine own reproach alone do fear." This motto, adopted early in life, has been more to me than all the sermons I ever heard. And I have heard not a few, although I may admit resemblance to my old friend Bailey Walker in my mature years. He was asked by his doctor about his sleep, and replied that it was far from satisfactory. He was very wakeful, adding, with a twinkle in his eye, "But I get a bit fine doze i' the kirk noo and then."